You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1.
Well, how do we handle this afternoon? Where do we take this party on Overdrive? We could fire up the old draft lottery simulator for about 2 hours straight.
Not doing it today.
No, not doing that.
No, we could. We're not supposed to be doing the Lafreniere draft simulator.
Really is embarrassing, isn't it, that they're even in this?
We're supposed to be dialed in and saying, okay, let's deal with Tampa. Let's lock horns with them. Let's see where we match up. Maybe we get Boston down the road. Maybe we get a run in with Philly. Now we're doing a lap. I'm not running around this stupid desk. I'm back at this stupid desk. I'm not running around it for Laffy.
All right, but let me ask you this. If we end up doing it at some point in the show and the Leafs get the number one pick on the simulator, will you please run? Will you please just do that for us?
I'll do it for you, Noodles, but I don't.
Yes.
Crap. No, he doesn't care, and I don't care.
No, he cares.
Even want Lafreniere. I don't care about Lafreniere. What are they going to do, add some more skill up front, and then what, you're going to have a line and one guy next year? I don't know. Why do we need it's not even a factor. It would be great. He's a great young player. Shouldn't even be in this situation.
No, they shouldn't be in this situation. That's absolutely correct. I mean, when it comes to the draft lottery, ask me in about 2 hours and 15 minutes, okay? If they win it, then I'm sure we'll have a very different tone. All of a sudden, people will suggest it was all worth it, and maybe this is in the best interest of the team. But here's the reality, okay? They have, I don't know, did they make the playoffs, miss the playoffs? Who knows?
They didn't make the playoffs. They did not qualify for the playoffs.
Okay, so there you go.
Well,
I've been trying to do the math, okay?
Yeah, I've tried to figure
it out. I've been doing
this
for 10 years, all right? I have been at TSN Radio for 10 years. 9 years total, but 10, like, evaluations of a Leafs season gone awry, okay? So we got on the air April of 2011. Yeah. They missed the playoffs that year, clearly. The whole point was we're going to start when the Leafs hopefully make it. If they don't, it's day one of the NHL playoffs. I spent a good portion of the first week or two on the show discussing the season that had just taken place in Leafland. If this does not count as a playoff appearance, which, okay, for that circumstance and for all intents and purposes, we will say that it does not count. I have been doing this show for 10 years. They have missed the playoffs 6 times. They have made it 4. They lost in Game 7 twice, 3 times. 3 times to the same team. And then we all know that they lost in Game 6 to Washington. That is 6 misses in 10 years and 2 or 3 colossal, epic collapses, 18-wheelers flying off a cliff. Maybe the most embarrassing season in franchise history when Horacek took over and Kadri got suspended and Salutegate and all that garbage.
Right.
10 years, and I'm sick of doing this show. It's the same thing every single year. For 10 years, I've been doing the exact same show.
Right.
The exact same show. Like, we might as well go back and find the tape. It's the same story all the time. They're just not good enough. And here's the truth. Are they more talented right now than 10 years ago? Absolutely. Do I feel better about where they are today than I did 10 years ago? Yes, I do. Substantially better? I don't think I do. I can't sit here and say I feel way better about this organization today than I did 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Think about that. And I feel way worse about where they're at and where they're going than I did 2 years ago.
Everybody asked me. I got a bunch of texts this afternoon. Oh, are you going to just go nuts at 4 o'clock? I'm like, that routine is over.
We've done it for 10 years.
That routine is over.
And 10 years.
You talk about the team. There are better players. But if this team has aspirations to be one of those go-to teams, like a Tampa, St. Louis, Vegas, Boston Bruins, they didn't qualify for the playoffs. Washington, they didn't qualify for the playoffs. And they kind of showed during this series. It's just it's a bizarre roster when it comes down to crunch time. Their depth on defense is an issue. How they're going to fix that, I don't know. Obviously, Barry and CeCe are probably on the way out the door. They bunched together their best players on one line, and it was a totally different team that went on the ice after that. They couldn't create momentum. I love the idea of having high-end talent that you pay $11 million to, but you put them on the same line and they can't score a goal, you are screwed, and you cannot win squat. You can't win squat.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I'm just sitting back and listening because I'm absorbing it all. I mean,
Yeah.
Well, what I mean is I can't disagree. I can't disagree with anything, but I almost I have to be honest, and maybe, Brian, you can drive the bus when it comes to this, because I think you've got a good pulse of things. Where were we at Friday night after they won? Because I went upstairs, and I said to Steph, I thought they were going to win the cup. And I'm not lying, because you know when teams have that, like, oh, you know what, you know, like, OS, you know.
A lot of teams that do win the cup, Jamie, they have a couple moments during
that,
the playoffs,
like,
where they're like, out. They're out, they're done, and they have a miracle.
All I could think about was Jonathan Toews against Detroit losing
Seabrook.
It in the penalty box. Or, you know, no, I think it was Toews and Seabrook came over and calmed him down, or vice versa. Whatever it was. All I could think about is, like, teams that win have to hit, like, they have to go through this adversity. And I was like, if you haven't... They were dead and buried. They were in the grave. And they found a way to claw out. And then I thought, okay, game five, they're going to win. And all of a sudden I'm looking at Tampa and I'm like, okay, Hedman, is he's a question mark? Like, you start
to... I never had the optimism.
And okay, I did.
You're not alone, Noodles. I was talking to everybody. I can't even tell you how many people were calling me and texting me between Friday night and last night at 8 p.m., and we're talking lifelong diehard Leaf fans who have been so scarred and so jaded. And all of them, almost to a man, all of them, they're like, I feel so optimistic they're going to win. And I'd stop all of them and say, do you know who you're talking about? Do you realize who you're talking about?
But...
Because I don't share that optimism, because this team does not allow me to. I've been saying that my whole life. I have lived here for 37 years. They have never been in a position to make people feel optimistic, and certainly not over the past 15, clearly.
Right.
I mean, there have been different stages. The Gilmore Leafs, the Sundin Leafs, clearly. And those guys are a different story and a different beast.
Right.
But the history of this team should have suggested that you should not feel optimistic. And the team this year, in a microcosm, the 2019-2020 team, proved countless times before COVID and obviously post-COVID that whatever you saw the night before is meaningless. It doesn't register. It doesn't mean it's going to show up the next night. They were so inconsistent from September all the way through August, and they're a flawed team, and that's what happened. They didn't get blown out last night by any means.
I think they
were the better team, but it doesn't matter. You lost the game. Korpisalo stood on his head, and Columbus chipped away the way they always do, and they found a way to win the game. Full credit to Columbus.
And Jamie, you always say, you know, the Joe from the Bridges of the world, they're it's too much and blah, blah, blah. That's why it is, because they've been tortured.
He said
37 years. Other guys have been around for 50 years.
Well,
and they get their hopes up. And that's why people get so horny and excited when something positive happens. They're like, maybe.
Right.
And
you're,
then at
you're
the
right,
end of it,
right.
They're like, you know what? And the tweets that come out that say, oh, that's so leafy. That's why.
But the crazy thing about this, and Brian, you can speak to this, because 4 minutes left in the game, was it Boone Jenner scores to make it 3-0? I think you put a tweet out. And
that was on Friday night.
Yes, what I mean.
You're right.
And after that comeback, #deletetweet was trending.
Right.
Because people were like, I'm done with this team, to hell with them, blah, blah. And like, even the Grappler was, you know, being a hero on Twitter, and his comment, like, it was hilarious. And then everyone's like, oh, spoke too soon. Which, I mean, I get it. I don't know where people are at right now. I mean, regardless of how you felt Friday night, how do you feel about this group right now?
Well,
tweet and how emotional you were that Friday night.
Yeah, no, the tweet was 100% correct. It got burned for 48 hours.
Right.
But I tweeted out with 3 minutes to go when I thought the game was over in game four, a premature tweet. I need to get some pills. I need some help, because that was premature. That was bad on my part.
I should know better.
I tweeted out that was the worst Leaf season since 14-15.
Most disappointing.
Whatever you want to call it. It doesn't matter. I mean, that's semantics. Fine. Most disappointing. Even the tank season was more likable, in my opinion, because it had a purpose, a plan, a future, and it paid off. 14-15 was the year I referenced already. The Kadri suspended, Salute Gate, Horacek.
Right.
That was a disaster. Like, clearly, that is in a different stratosphere. But this year has been so disappointing, so up and down. They could never find the rails. They could never get on it. And then they storm back on Friday night, and they win in the fashion they do. And then what do they do last night? They throw it all away, which means the win on Friday is just a footnote. It's just a footnote. It's
really
a cool
is.
Moment that was exciting that will get referenced. Like that. Listen, it was awesome. Good for them. They battled. They win in overtime. That was great. But it doesn't mean anything if you lose game five.
Agreed.
You know, it's like the Red Sox storming back against the Yankees in 04. If you lose in game seven, who cares that you made it a series?
Yeah, exactly.
You've got to win.
Yeah, and James, before we left SportsCenter, James threw one more at me. He said, you got to make changes. And I think the answer is yes. And it doesn't have to be get rid of Nylander or you got to do this or a defenseman. Or maybe it's just a change of philosophy and idea on what can actually win. Because I don't know if you can bring this group back the way it's structured right now with Morgan Riley and patchwork defensemen. I know Muzzin was out of the lineup, but maybe just a different idea of what's going to win for this group. And I don't know what that is, how you add to that. I mean, there's different philosophies out there. But to come back with the same idea, I don't know if that's going to fly. And everybody brings up the Washington Capitals. There's two different philosophies. One's the Chicago Blackhawks, where those young guys won three Stanley Cups. And the other one is Stevie Yzerman and Alex Ovechkin, who trudged along for, that's not even a word, trudge, but they went 13 years before they won Stanley Cups.
Yeah.
So everyone's like, well, don't forget about Washington. They, you know, Detroit, Yzerman, Ovechkin. So it's whatever one you want to pick, but...
Well, here's the thing, though, about that Detroit reference. You're right. But do you know how much that team changed between 1989 and 1997, you know, in Detroit? Like, who showed up? There was Scotty Bowman all of a sudden showed up. Brendan Shanahan shows up. Chris Chelios, you know, like there's – so, yes, no one is suggesting that the best players on this team are no longer uber-talented players. Of course they are. But there are flaws with this team. You know, and here's the issue that Kyle Dubas and company are facing. They don't really have any cap flexibility, a little bit, but not much. And it's a flat cap for the next two, maybe 3 years. They have an 87.5% chance of not having a first-round pick this year. So you don't have much flexibility. You don't have collateral like you would like to in order to acquire what you need to. And I don't think Dubas has... I'm sure he's contemplated everything. I don't think he's ever been comfortable with truly approaching the idea of trading one of their best players, because I understand why he wouldn't. Why would you want to trade young talent? Of course you don't want to. Right. But Kasperi Kapanen trade isn't going to get the job done. Andreas Janssen, that doesn't do anything. So for me, there are two guys that are 100% here, Austin Matthews and John Tavares. Austin Matthews is clearly the best player. He's the leader of this team. He's the face of this team. He's a superstar. He just keeps getting better. Tavares, because he came here, he's the captain, the position he plays, got a full no trade, full no move, full commitment from everyone. He's here. He's playing here. And I'm not saying you don't want him. Of course you do. But I'm just saying his circumstance puts him in this situation. I think everyone else, you have to make a determination on the pieces you're looking for, not the price you're trying to get. Those are two different things. Seeking out a price means you want to get rid of the guy. Seeking out a piece means you're putting together a hockey team like that. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think has to be considered here. So, you know, everyone's going to say, well, William Nylander. Maybe. But maybe Mitch Marner. Maybe Morgan Riley.
Yeah, and an example
maybe
of
Freddie
that,
Anderson.
Brian, is Jimmy Rutherford, when he got to Pittsburgh, he wanted to change a bit of the dynamic, a significant dynamic of that team, and he moved a 30-40 goal scorer in James Neal to Nashville for Hornquist.
Mm-hmm.
And that subtle move changed the dynamic and gave them a totally different outlook, approach, and that's what you're talking about. It's just about a dynamic, a different look. It's not about a price or
it's not running guys out of town.
No,
it's not
no.
blaming guys no. individually. It's you're putting together a hockey team. It's a big puzzle. It's the most difficult puzzle you could possibly put together. And they are missing pieces. Like, they're missing a number one right defenseman and a number two right defenseman. Like, that's what they're missing.
No
like
question.
If you got Morgan Riley at number one on the left side, Muzzin at number two on the left side, I hate to break it to you. Dermott is not a top four guy. He's not. Justin Hall is not a top four guy. And Sandin's a kid, so he's probably not going to step in and be able to truly change your fortunes. CeCe's gone. Barry's gone. So you're looking at two guys in your top four. I don't know how you find that.
No.
Between
and
now
how
and next
you fit
year.
That
just,
well, money-wise.
Here's the thing, guys, and I would say everything you're saying makes 100% logical sense. And that's, I think that's a great sign, because we're all
thank you, Noodles.
Thanks.
No, because I wasn't sure what the hell to expect today, because I the wave of emotion that I've been feeling, I can't imagine what others are feeling.
Noodles,
too.
We told you at the top, it's like the flying off the handle. It's 10 years old.
But what I'm saying is, if for anybody who is expecting Kyle Dubas to make a massive trade tomorrow and to do this and change. It's going to take a long time. I wholeheartedly believe the National Hockey League's not going to start playing again till January.
Yep.
That's not even going to – that's training camp and all of that. They may have to start the season looking worse than before they get better to assess what they have. What we should be looking forward to is what this team looks like after the trade deadline next year, because you've got expansion coming in, so you've got to sort that out. Who you think you're going to lose in expansion? You know, Freddie Anderson's a year away from unrestricted free agency. I think you're probably, I would argue that he's probably not going to be in the net next playoffs for the Toronto Maple Leafs. That, you know, that's give
or take. Who's the guy then? Is it Jack Campbell? Do you have faith in Campbell?
No. I think there is going to be some moving pieces, and that's what I mean. Like, you have to take a step back and assess, to your point, Brian, like what we have, what the group has of four players. But then, you know, am I comfortable spending $3.5 million on my right winger on the third line in a guy like Kapanen or Janssen? If Robertson's going to play, that's going to be more economical higher up in the lineup. You have to move the deck chairs around. And then, to your point, what if the philosophy changed slightly? You're allowed to adjust it. What if you're like, hey, we like our skill, but we want a little bit more bite? And maybe it is. It's not. I agree. I saw Nylander and Marner trending, and I'm like, everyone wants to run out those guys. And,
look,
and
you
got to
sit back and you got to make educated decisions.
Exactly.
You can't just say, oh, you can't be Joe from the bridge, like I mentioned earlier.
No.
You got to win trades too, right?
Correct.
Like that's what has to happen.
Or at least get what you want out of the trade.
Yeah. Like, if it's even okay, so be it. Like, but. You know, there's been a lot of famous one-for-one deals, and I don't know what is going to happen in the future. But there have been one-for-one deals that have worked and one-for-ones that have not worked, right? Taylor Hall for Larson.
Adam Larson.
Yeah, not necessarily a great-looking deal, although the first year Edmonton was happy with what he brought. Johansson for Seth Jones. That at the time made a lot of sense. It still would if Johansson pulled his weight like he did the first year or two. But... you know, that's what we're talking about here. But you got to be careful, because you don't want to fall into the trap of Peter Chiarelli, where it's like, well, I'm just going to get rid of this guy for that one piece.
Yeah.
You don't just trade William Nylander because the guy happens to shoot right.
You don't trade
Taylor Hall
for Larson.
No, you do not. You can't do that. So you've got to be careful. You know, that doesn't mean you have to do it this offseason.
No, you're right. And I guess that's my point is you have the luxury, unfortunately, right now of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can sit back. There are going to be teams that are going to be pressed up against the cap that may have to move players. They may have the depth going, I'm going to lose this player in expansion. I'd rather trade him and get something for them. You know, I think the league is going to be crazy with a flat salary cap and teams pressed up against it, not to mention another team coming into the National Hockey League. Like, we're going to see, Brian, you want movement, you want water cooler chatter. Like, this is, all hell's going to break loose if you ask me, but it's not going to break loose next week. It's going to break
loose. No, it's going to take time. I mean, they've got to get to the off season, which feels weird saying that in August, but that won't be until October.
The hardest part for me is we're going to sit here for the next 2 months and sit there and go, what if, what could have? And, you know, they're saying it in Edmonton. They're saying it in Pittsburgh. They're saying it in Toronto. What could have, what should have, could have, would have. The one thing I've noticed through all of the, you know, most of the teams that have advanced, all of them played defense with structure. And that was hard work and commitment.
None of them have one player on their team that makes $11 million.
Well,
not one.
Listen, that's, you know, the way they're built, it is what it is. But I kept thinking, I'm like, Arizona, you know, guys on that team are looking behind the bench, and you turn around, you're not working your ass off, and you're staring at Rick Tocchet. Like, you know, to me, there's a lot of things that the mix, everyone who's involved, like, you can't just lay it at one person's feet. There's a lot of blood on everyone's hands.
Yeah, of course. Well, and again, credit to Columbus. Like, we all know the stats. It's been thrown out there. The Leafs scored what, three times 5-on-5 in five games? That's because Columbus shut them down. Their goaltending stepped up in a big way, but also the way they defend. So as we stated for weeks leading up to the series, who is going to dictate the style of play? Whoever does is likely going to win. Well, Columbus did, and they did. So there's your answer. But listen, the we'll come back and we'll talk about where Dubas comes into play on this. We've mentioned the word philosophy multiple times. You know, he was on our show, what was it, 6-7 months ago now, when he let go of Babcock and he brought in Keefe, and he said he put his career on the line for his philosophy and the way he sees it and the way he wants to build this team. Well, he's, you know, he's in the crosshairs now, because this is a big, big 3 or 4 month stretch for Kyle Dubas. Because just based on the standings, and I would say the eye test, and even just looking at it on paper, he got on the job a couple of years ago. They are worse today than they were 2 years ago. Like, just based on the standings alone, it's irrefutable. Like, they had 105 points right after he took over. And this year they were straddling the playoff line. So
they didn't qualify for the playoffs. Very simple.
That's, exactly. That's and he's the GM. So, and he's been here for a couple of years. So the he's in the crosshairs. He is the one that has his fingerprints all over this team, and it's time for him to really figure this out, because they're a mediocre team. They're not Ottawa or Detroit.
No.
You know, like, it's not like they're terrible.
They're a great regular season team that can creep around 100 points and it's a crapshoot after that.
But they've got some high-end talent. They're Edmonton, basically, now. You know, like, the two of them are two peas in a pod. They've got some outstanding world-class players. And then they got to figure out what else they got and what else they're going to do. So we'll come back and take a look at Dubas and Keefe and where they take it from here. We'll look back at the PGA Championship. What a Sunday it was yesterday. With about 45 minutes left in that tournament, I thought it was going to be like a 12-player playoff. And then Colin Morikawa hits one of the all-time great drives on 16.
By the way, we saw it off, because when you pick the winner,
absolutely
dude,
not.
We said that you
no,
picked
you
the winner.
No, you did not say that. That was never a part of the
program.
I
thought Hayes won. I won
by a mile.
Won.
I won by about 20 total.
It wasn't
strokes.
A mile. What was the final total?
It was, I think, close to 20 strokes, dude. I had all my six guys win like the top 20.
I will admit the leaderboard was somewhat concerning when I looked up, and everyone, even Berger, bastard Berger was up there. I'm like, that was his final pick.
You know what's crazy? The guy who ended up lowest on my team was Koepka. Koepka,
this guy puked all over himself. He's
yesterday.
A jackass for being a hero, too.
Oh, God, was he a hero on Saturday? He's like, look at the guys ahead of me, only DJ, and he's had a ton of chances, and he can't capitalize.
Yeah.
And Koepka went out and wall squatted against the tree and started throwing deuces all over the course.
Yes, he did. All over his tight
white
pants.
That shot by Morikawa on that par four, though, with the driver.
That's an all-time great shot.
Oh, it's an all-timer.
All-time great shot. Like, it really is. That's Tiger at Augusta on 15.
Dude, this guy is legit. Three wins, a major championship, and he puked one away at the Colonial.
That's right.
To Berger.
To Berger. Yeah, he missed like a two-footer. It's unbelievable how good he's been. What an introduction. Like, 6 months ago, who knew who this guy was?
I know. He's awesome.
He's outstanding. And he's not a bomber. He's just a ball striker. You know, like, what a weekend it was. So we'll get into that later.
When you say he's not a bomber, he hits a 330 down the middle. Bombers. It's amazing. If you can't bomb it now, look at that leader. Like, if you don't bomb it, you're not even, you don't have a chance.
Well, but again, I would say Morikawa isn't a Cameron Champ or DJ.
No, I know, but he moves it out there. Like, Jeff Hart said he hits it before the tournament. Our boy Jeff Hart said, I move it 250 off the tee.
Yeah, you're done. That's me at the Nash. Like, you hit a 250 at a tournament like that, that's like a 7,400-yard course, 7,500, maybe more. Jeff Hart, that wasn't going to happen.
Well, we got a golf game lined up for Thursday morning. You want to tip it and see what you got or no?
No, I'm not interested in – I'll play from the tips when I have to, like in a situation like we've been talking about for months.
Gary
not
Roberts
enjoyable.
Involved? Is Rob's involved, or
no,
is he done with you guys?
He
I was horrified. This guy, we'll go to break and talk about it, because the group text with Gary came back to life. And I was horrified that he was going to say something stupid, but he didn't. He stayed away from it.
I avoided it. I gave it the thumbs up. I chirped you once, and that was it. All right, so we'll tell you more about that. We'll continue with the Leafs and 10 years running here on TSN Radio, breaking down another disappointing
season.
The
annual show.
The annual show, exactly. And the lottery's happening in a couple of hours.
We're not
so maybe
doing
the Leafs win it.
We're not doing
it. Yeah,
we
have
we'll hit
to
it
do
once
it once.
At 5 p.m.
Once.
Hour. We'll hit it once. We have to. For old time's sake, just to get you running around that studio one more time.
I'll walk.
Okay, fine. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, a quick simulator tap, and Florida wins the lottery.
Oh.
Yeah, we'll do that actually coming into every break. Why not?
Nice.
Who cares? There's 12 teams that are in it. I would say, well, I mean, all of them would happily win. There will be varying degrees of outward happiness, you know, jubilation if they win. Like if the Leafs win tonight, Shanahan, it's not like anyone's going to be there. It'll all be virtual, I'm sure, if they're even there at all. But he'll play it cool. He won't be bouncing off the walls. But if Minnesota wins it, Bill Guerin will be bouncing off the walls.
Nashville.
For sure.
You know,
Nashville. Yeah, for
some,
sure.
Winnipeg. Like, there's some teams that certainly could use it a little bit more and maybe, you know, should be in that situation. So you're right. Like I
think just accept that maybe this – like, Minnesota probably thought this is where we were going to be anyway. You know,
correct.
Like when they got rid of Boudreaux and they brought in Guerin, they're like, we got to turn some things over and get younger. If they win it, they have a right, quote unquote, to be very happy. If Toronto, Edmonton, Pittsburgh win it, they're going to be like, really? I can't believe we're here. I guess so. Thank you. Like, they're not going to turn it down.
No.
But, I mean, come on. It's not where different. Either of these teams or any of these teams should be. But we'll find out in just over an hour and a half who ends up with that top pick. But
we should do our prediction anyway. So who we think, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Just before 6 o'clock.
Yeah, we'll do it just before 6 o'clock.
Okay.
I mean, we all got it's a 1-12 shot, right? So or
yeah.
1-8 shot.
1-8 shot.
1-8.
12.5%. Yeah.
When is that firing up? When is Billy Daly doing that?
6 p.m.
6:15-ish probably. I don't know. You know they'll drag it out a little bit.
We're not
I think
going
it's
to
Batman.
That live.
No, well, you know the reason why we can't do that.
Oh.
Yeah,
oh.
Like, give your head a shake over
sorry
here.
Sorry about that.
Oh my goodness.
Oh,
my. Did you see Mickelson throw a curveball at your boy Faldo over the weekend?
Dude, I didn't even get the joke. Like, I had to text you. What was so funny about that? Like, I didn't get it.
But okay, let's play it. We've got it here. Before we get back into the Leafs and where we're at with their whole situation, this was Phil Mickelson, who I think CBS, ESPN, the Golf Channel would just hand over a blank check and say, we'll do anything for you to come to the booth. He is he's affable. He's funny. He doesn't care. He'll chirp people.
Yeah.
He has aged like fine wine. He is so likable today. He was so hateable 20 years ago, Phil Mickelson. But this is how he begins his sit down with Jim Nantz and Jeepers Creepers Faldo on Saturday.
Phil, great to have you.
Thank you. It's nice to be here. It's there's three things I do well. Play golf and talk golf.
What's the third then? You said three things.
Yeah. He was setting you up.
Anyway.
Leave that to your imagination, dear boy.
Jeepers Creepers.
Oh,
Jeepers
no.
Creepers.
I don't, like, I don't.
I thought
that line
funny.
From a movie? Or?
No, I don't. I think he's talking about sex. I mean, I just assume that that's what he was talking about. Maybe with him it could be gambling.
Yeah, but
he might
Wells
be talking about gambling.
That. Like, Shooter McGavin had a tweet where he was like, I now love Phil because he said that. Like, did Shooter say that?
I have no idea.
I don't know
where
why
that
all of a sudden became so funny because it was Phil.
No,
like,
I would
assume
it was
a
reaction,
like, you're an idiot.
Too.
It's a reaction. I would guess Phil has been doing that at cocktail parties for 25 years. And catching Faldo types who are like, oh, you only said two. And he's like, yeah, exactly. You figure it out. Like,
Jeepers
he knows,
creepers.
He knows there's going to be a guy that'll say, oh, no.
I've got a buddy who's a general manager in the NHL who always will walk up to me. It's his running joke. You look good. Are you sick? He says that. And that's his funny line. You know, like, it's not a funny thing, but I thought it was brilliant. I was dying laughing.
I like when you hear more kind of candid. Do we have the JT missing that putt?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
it was
real. It was live.
Yeah,
and
that was awesome.
Listen to this. This is what everybody says when they hit a shot golfing.
Justin Thomas, after his excellent approach shot, ran all the way toward the back of the green for birdie.
Dude, you've got to be f***ing kidding me.
Well...
That was right into your grill. Like,
I
just
love it.
It was perfect.
The reaction too. The reaction on air, live on air. Who was calling that?
That
the,
was where like it was like a supplemental panel that were
yeah.
just kind of.
He was ESPN, I think.
He was rattled. He's like, well.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Nothing
oh,
you can
jeepers
do.
Creepers. How dare you with that.
Jeepers creepers.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, that, with that language, Justin that, Thomas.
That was every Leaf fan last
That's right.
night.
That's right. That's right. Only the Leaf fans, only the Leafs, as many people have pointed out, can put forth a historic comeback and then make it borderline meaningless 48 hours later. Like, from yeah. Friday night to Sunday, the mix of emotions. And it just was a flat game. It wasn't much of a game, quite frankly, from either team. It's not like Columbus looked like they were dying to win the game either, necessarily.
It was a chess match. Columbus got to their game, and you know, the game looks different, though, if Korpisalo doesn't make a couple big
right.
saves.
And yep.
and honestly, I thought at one, I mean, it was a lucky goal. I thought Freddie made a couple big saves in the second, but, you know, you give up that backbreaking goal. Like, if that's a one-goal game with 5 minutes left, like, the Leafs are going to push and push and push and maybe get that equalizer. But at that point, you know, it's unfortunate. But you can't lay it all on Freddie because they didn't score. Like, they flat out didn't
no.
score. But you
nope.
need – you
The
need...
Liam Foodie goal can't go in, as we know. I mean, that goes without
that's,
saying.
Can't
that,
go.
That simply cannot go in. But he's one of the question marks now, right? He's got 1 year yep. left on his deal. He's 31. He hasn't been able to win the big game. His playoff stats in the biggest moments speak for themselves.
But my buddy brought up a good point on the way in. It was like, throw the Carolina Hurricanes decor in front of him. Maybe he's different.
Well, you don't disagree with that. You throw the way that Columbus plays in front of him. Like, that's, you know, it's different. But you can't do that. Based on the way that the Leafs are built and the way yeah. that they want to play.
And you talk about the same comments, Brian, for 10 years. For 8 years, I've been here. And for 8 years, I've been talking about the Leafs and what they do in their own zone. I know they tried to work on it, and they said it was a priority going into this. But it's still some just eye-opening things back there where you're like, what the hell is that? No matter what the regime or what the players are, it's been the same thing for 8 years. It's
well,
like,
exactly.
I could like never that's... judge a goaltender honestly playing with this organization because I've never seen a real stable group back there that protects them. And if you saw what Shea Weber did for Montreal in that series for Carey Price, killing penalties in front of the net, shutting down star players, it's a massive difference. It's a massive difference.
It is, yeah. and you're right. I mean, this is... kind of the theme of this hour for us as we reminisce over the past, you know, 8 years, 9 years for Noodles, 10 years for me on this station, just talking about the yeah. the previous year for the Leafs, is we're talking two different owners, four different GMs, Burke, Nonis, Lamorello, Dubas, four different coaches, Wilson, Carlisle, Babcock, Keefe, and it's a lot of the same discussions. I mean, they have way more talent today, clearly. They have way more talent, like with Matthews and Marner and Tavares and Nylander and Riley in his prime. They are in a better position.
Yeah, they hit on draft picks, and they signed a high-end free agent.
Yeah, but they still need to slot properly. They still need to find way more help on defense, which we've been talking about for a decade. And the DNA of the team, it's difficult to put your finger on it and what it means and how you find it. But that's why when I say I can't sit here and say I feel that much better about them today than I did 10 years ago, in the you know, from the concept of them chasing a cup or being a cup caliber team, I can't sit here and say they are right now.
No,
I just can't.
Was Babcock, I mean, I saw him trending and I saw some people commenting, like, you know, it's almost the same problems that Babcock was trying to get out of that group. You know, remember he kept saying, like,
right.
we're not there.
Carlisle before that.
Carlisle, like, we don't play the right way. You got to play the right way, you know, and I mean, Sheldon's still early on, and I'm not willing to give up.
But he's
on
a rookie
anything,
coach. Yeah, it's not about giving up. It's that we just don't know. Like you,
right.
I don't know if Sheldon Keefe could become one of the all-time great Leaf coaches. He could be out of here in 2 years. That's the nature of the position as a head coach. You know, I don't know. There's not enough sample size. I'm not blaming him for this series and really when he took it over, they were in a bad place. When he took over for Babcock, like a really bad place. And they went on a heater quickly, and I think he changed things. You know, so I don't have an issue with where Sheldon Keefe is right now, but I can't sit here and say I know everything about his coaching style and whether or not it's going to work, you know, to chase a cup. Nobody can answer that question yet. Yeah. But Kyle Dubas is a different story. Dubas has been here for a couple of years. There's a couple things as we look back on the past 13 or 14 months that clearly went against him. The Kadri deal already looks like one of the worst deals in Leaf history. It does. And a lot of that is because Tyson Berry didn't pull his weight. He never found his game. He just never felt comfortable here. And now he's gone. You couldn't possibly bring him back. Although Dubas might think about it if he's committed to the philosophy. But you're basically now looking at Nazem Kadri for Alex Kerfoot. That's a terrible trade. Terrible. And
this is as bad as it gets.
Pretty much. Like, there's been some bad deals in Leaf history, but that one's pretty bad. And the Marlow deal, that was a poison pill of a contract. Lou left him just an absolute drag bunt of a deal that he had to unload because of the timing of the kids coming up and all that kind of stuff. But it's your job to try to avoid handing over a 13th or 14th pick overall to get rid of a contract.
That's a gig. It's a tough gig. Cheese and cracker tray and went right down to lasagna, that drag bunt.
Yeah, it did. But I don't think Lou would have made the same deal to get rid of Marlow. I think he would have worked out a deal that would have avoided giving up a first-round pick. Just based on his history, based on his relationships.
That, what other options are there?
Well, Lou made players disappear when he first got here. Lou Lamoriello has a way of working with GMs around the league. He works out deals.
Hip tightness.
I'll never understand that Marlow deal to begin with. I think there was Babcock behind that. It's like, what did they have to give him? They give him that third extra year that no one else wanted to?
Right, exactly. Which, obviously, in retrospect, is just that was a mess. And that's not Kyle Dubas'
fault. For a guy that age and with that track record in the playoffs, it's not like it was Mark Messier or anything. I have no. I'm not getting into it, though. I'm not going to get dragged down that road.
And that's digging up old stuff. And again, it's not fair of me to listen. Dubas was in a tough spot. There's no question about that. With the Marlow deal, he had to get rid of it. We knew he had to. And other teams had him over the barrel. I think he probably thought his team was going to finish with, the 25th pick going to Carolina, not the 13th
higher.
Or 14th.
Exactly.
But, miscalculation on the team that you have, I guess. That's kind of like a Burkism with the Kessel deal. He was all about Kessel. He didn't think he was handing over the second pick overall, ever.
Right.
That's why he wouldn't have made the deal if he thought it was the second overall pick. And the next year was the 9th overall pick for Dougie Hamilton.
Let's just torture ourselves.
Just 10 years of this. 10 years. Like, I could go down.
You gotta be kidding me.
Justin Thomas for 4 hours.
Keep that baby handy forever.
Yeah.
Forever. That is taking, have an idea. Rowark got his tits lit. It's just taking over for everything.
Dude, you've gotta be kidding me.
Is he talking to himself or his caddy, you think?
That's just what everybody says when they miss a putt and it doesn't. Yeah, it just doesn't break the way you want. You're like,
you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's hit the simulator here. Why not? Come on now, simulator. Yeah. Toronto, the Maple Leafs win the sim. We needed that positivity.
They did it, Naylor.
I'm taking a picture of this and I'm sending it out.
You know what one situation I would run? If it was like a Hedman or Doughty, I would run for that, but not another, like, what?
Lafreniere doesn't get the heartbeat.
Well, he's an unbelievable prospect and talent, but it's like, what are you going to, like?
No, it's not McDavid. It's not, I understand that.
Yeah.
I get it, but still, hey, listen, we'll see. Maybe it's a positive Monday after all. We'll find out at just after 6 o'clock. We're going to get into the PGA Championship and the history that was made by Colin Morikawa. Rays coming up in about 25 minutes. We'll continue to break down the Leaf loss last night, the series, the season. The Raptors are in action tonight, taking on Milwaukee in a big game. Giannis will not play. Jays are off. They dropped 2 of 3 again at at Fenway. They can't hit. They cannot hit. They are 29th, I believe, in the league in run score, 29th in on-base percentage. Charlie Montoyo, though, is a kid in a candy store.
Oh, he's like, we're this close.
The 27 Yankees. Yes, Montoyo, it's the 27 Yankees. They're just about
unreal.
To break loose. Like, I'm losing my mind today. We got to hit a break. We're going to get to some positivity here. The PGA Championship coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Ray Ferraro in about 15. We'll tell you more about our group chat with Gary Roberts, where Gary stands with the two of us idiots. Lining up golf.
There's
later
no
in the
way
week.
He's playing. Like, he just will not play.
No, he's not going to play. He's not playing with us. But what a weekend it was at the PGA. I got to say, West Coast Golf Major, the best.
Dynamite.
The best. Watching them still out there on Saturday night at 9 o'clock was epic. 9:30. Epic. And we got a guy that was big part of what ESPN was doing over the weekend. Former PGA Tour player, host with SiriusXM, making his debut here. Here's Colt Knost. Colt, what'd you make of the tournament overall? It was, with about 45 minutes left, it felt like we might have six or seven guys in a playoff, and then Morikawa just decided, check, please, I'll take it. Pretty cool Sunday, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a blast to watch. It was a blast to be a part of, and obviously a very deserving champion, but I'm with you. I mean, they're coming down the stretch on the back nine. I thought we were going to have a six- or seven-way playoff to decide who wins the Wanamaker Trophy.
Where do you think this Morikawa goes from here? I mean, it's so impressive. He lost at the Colonial in a playoff there, but I think it's two wins, a major championship. This guy looks like he's dialed in and is going to be right up there every week, Colt.
Yeah, the kid's a stud. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I think it's unfair to him to say, oh, this kid's going to go on and win 10 majors, just because golf's so competitive right now. There's so many superstars in the game. But, I mean, this kid could go on to have a Hall of Fame career. I mean, win a ton of tournaments, win a bunch of majors, but you never know. But he definitely has all the tools to do all that stuff.
What did you think of DeChambeau and what he's doing and his play this weekend, the whole week? Like, is this going to turn into major championships for him? I know it's a little bit, it's a lot different. He's trying to hit it 400 yards and gouge it out from everywhere. Do you think that could turn into success at majors?
Yeah, I mean, I would consider this past week a success. This is his first top 10 ever in a major. He finished tied for fourth, and obviously off to a great start yesterday. Looked like he might shoot something crazy low.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really do. I think places like Augusta National are going to set up so good for Bryson. You know, he's hitting it very, very far, and he's hitting it relatively straight.
Yeah.
If he can just figure out how to be a little better around the greens as far as chipping and pitching the ball, he's going to be a factor in a lot of majors.
What did you make of Koepka's comments and even Rory's response? We see a little bit of, back and forth, or at least some defending a little bit of DJ.
Yeah, I'm not sure what Brooks was trying to do, if he was trying to play some mind games, which if he was,
he was,
you know, I mean, that's what he wants to do. But I mean, as Rory said, the guy he was trying to play the mind games with isn't going to listen. I mean, Dustin probably didn't even hear those comments, if I was guessing, before he teed off on Sunday. But I love what Rory said. I love Rory coming to his defense. Rory's a very outspoken person, and we need him on the PGA Tour. And I love what he did.
We're chatting with Colt Knost from SiriusXM, longtime PGA Tour player. Did a great job with ESPN all weekend as well at the PGA Championship out at TPC Harding Park. Saturday, I was surprised at how people were reacting to the practicing of Hao Tong Lee, who was in the lead, you know, kind of coming into the stretch run here. And the video that ESPN was showing, CBS was showing, this guy was at the course for like 22 hours. And just constantly on the range, on the green, to the point where I saw Jason Day was like, I hope this guy knows what he's doing. Like, don't you need to relax a little bit? What did you make of his whole routine?
Yeah, it was obviously a lot and got a lot of attention. I mean, he did say he went home and took a little nap for a little bit and then came back. But listen, this kid, Hao Tong Lee's a young kid. You know, he's been trained from a very young age that it's all about golf. This is all he does. And I think that's just a normal day for Hao Tong Lee. You know, if he was home, he would be at the golf course for probably 12 hours. And he said, you know what, I don't care if it's a major championship or not. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to spend all day at the golf course because that's what I do. And he also said that he was trying to work in a new driver that he wasn't 100% comfortable with. But listen, these young kids have a lot of energy and they love being out there. I don't recommend that just because of, you know, how stressful and how taxing being in a major championship or even a regular PGA Tour event is. So he might have worn himself out a little bit, but you know what? You live and you learn.
So where do you stand on Tiger Woods and his, you know, we've seen him play twice now at the Memorial where
how did you expect him to play any better? He doesn't play.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Like, what does he have to do? Like, he barely snuck in at the Memorial. He barely snuck in this weekend. He just kind of hanging around. How does he get back into contention at a major or at any tournament?
Yeah, you know, I went out and followed him. I saw him hit some balls on Wednesday, and then he was in the group behind me on Thursday, and so I got to see some of the golf, obviously just turning around and watching. But I watched him warm up that morning, and he looked incredible. I mean, his speed was up, looked awesome. He went out, and I thought he shot an easy 200 par 68 the first day. I was really shocked with the rest of the week because he looked great to me Thursday. But I totally agree with y'all. I mean, you gotta play. You can't just take 5 months off and then show up and try to beat the best players in the world. Because, I mean, maybe when he was 24, he could do this because he was so much better than everybody else. But now, the guys are just too good, and he's got to get some more reps in if he wants to win another major.
Great stuff all weekend, man. It was a blast to hear you and see you out there, and I'm sure we'll catch up again down the road. Thank you for doing this.
You got it. Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
You too. There's Colt Knost from SiriusXM and PGA Tour player, and he was a big part of ESPN over the weekend as well. He's getting rave reviews. He did a great job. But, yeah, Tiger really never factored in. He just wasn't he did on Thursday. I mean, he was 2 under to start his tournament. That's kind of a rarity for him in most majors.
He just said it. You can't just wheel in there after 5 months and start beating these guys. They're too good.
They're too dialed in.
Tiger Woods did when he was dialed
exactly.
in.
Exactly. Like, you look at the leaderboard on Sunday, it's just great player, great player, great player, great. Yeah. Like, there are so many talented players on the tour right now. So we'll pick back up on that later in the afternoon. Ray Ferraro coming up in about 10 minutes. Ray's thoughts on the weekend. The draft lottery tonight and more. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.